I know you've been hearing a lot about missions lately. Last Sunday, I understand that Elizabeth gave a wonderful presentation, more than a couple minutes, video about missions. But I am so blessed to serve a church that puts missions as a top priority in reaching the world for Christ. Not just local missions, but regional missions and global missions. And that is so crucial because Jesus said that we're to go into all the world and make disciples for Jesus Christ. And that begins locally, but we also think globally as well. This morning we have a very special guest with us who I think she eats, sleeps, and drinks missions. Marie Vanderwall. Marie, come on up here. I just want to introduce you. You might recognize Marie. If you ever were at the post office at Nassau, she was the postmaster. Okay, all right, just want to be PC these days, you know. Marie was postmaster out there for 9 years. So her husband, Jim, is an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church as well, a former mentor of mine, but we've continued a collegial relationship. He's currently serving in my home church in Salem. But Marie has been by his side every step of the way and is serving in a very special capacity now in her own right as the Conference Secretary of Global Missions. Anything to do with missions with our Peninsula Delaware Conference goes through Marie. And so we are delighted to have her be able to come. She's going to talk to us today about a couple of trips she's been on and has some wonderful information to share with us. So, Marie, thank you so much for being with us. Let's make her feel welcome this morning, shall we?
Thank you very much. I was sharing with Fred this morning how I would rather take a beating than stand in front of people and talk. And it just always amazes me the way God works in our lives to just calm us and tell us everything is going to be all right. On my cell phone, a friend of mine took my cell phone one day. She said she wanted to do something with it, and I said, fine. And now every time my cell phone rings, the song that we were just listening to plays. And it was like God saying, okay, Marie, you'll be fine. Just calm down. So I am always amazed at how he works in our lives to calm us. Okay. As Fred said, that I am the Conference Secretary of Global Missions. I'm also the Communications Chair for the Congo Partnership. I am the Conference Nothing But Nets Coordinator. And I don't know, a couple other things. That's enough, though. I don't want to start bragging. I'll be in so much trouble. The Congo Partnership was established in the early 1990s, and it is a partnership between the Peninsula Delaware Annual Conference and the Congo Episcopal Area. Now, don't be dissuaded by this Episcopal Area thing. Our bishop, Bishop Peggy Johnson, is the bishop of Eastern Pennsylvania Conference and the Peninsula Delaware Conference, and that is her Episcopal Area. Bishop David Yemba has the Congo Episcopal Area, which has 6 annual conferences in it. So Peggy Johnson has 2, he has 6. And the partnership is a way for us to work together to help improve the Congolese lifestyle. In 1965, I think, Congo declared its independence. And when it did that, all of the Europeans pulled out. They took everything they had, they took all of the resources, and they took the government that they had established, and they just left. And the Congolese people then were left without knowing how to take care of themselves, without knowing how to run a government, and it's been chaos ever since. Okay. The area that's covered by Bishop Yemba, if you can picture a map of the United States, from Maine to Florida, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Mississippi River, that's the area he has to cover. One bishop, all that area. And it's broken, as I said, it's in 6 different conferences. One of the things that makes going to Congo so rewarding is the hospitality of the Congolese people. I have never in my life met people who are so hospitable. They have absolutely nothing, and they will give you everything they have. It's amazing. The church, after I told you about the government leaving, the church is what really keeps Congo going. And if you go back one just for a minute. And The Methodist Church is growing faster in Congo than it is anywhere else in the world. And the church universal is what keeps Congo going. Not just the Methodist Church, but all churches that are in Congo keep it going. That's where they go for their decision-making. That's where they go for their emotional support. That's where they go for the financial support when they need it, the people I'm talking about. That's where they go. They don't go to the government because the government's not going to help them. Okay, go ahead. We have several projects that we work on in Congo. There are agricultural projects. There are financial projects. There's all sorts of things that we do there. My favorite, and the one I'm going to talk to you most about today, is the PASA Nutrition Center. That was started in the 1960s as a refugee clinic. That's all they did. They took in pregnant women, helped to deliver their babies, and try to make sure that they were all as healthy as they could be. Today, the PASA Nutrition Center has a pharmacy. They perform surgeries. It's a maternity ward, a nutrition center, and a pediatric center. One of the projects that we want to work on is getting an elder care center there, because there are so many elderly people now in Congo that have no one to take care of them that we're trying to put a new clinic in there for that. Okay, go ahead. I don't know how many of you remember Hope for the Children of Africa, but while Hope for the Children of Africa was a United Methodist Committee on Relief program, and they raised money to help feed the children. And the Nutrition Center received money and was feeding the children five times a week. When that program ended, as all programs do, they have life expectancies, and when it ended, the funding was cut. And in 2007, when I was in Congo, they were feeding the children on average 2 to 3 times a week. And that was all they were getting. That was it. The only food they got was coming here. We have now, through the partnership, gotten back up to where we are feeding the children 5 times a week, which is the best that we can really do for them. And what fascinates me is it's 25 cents a day to feed a child. That's it. If we put a quarter a day in a bucket somewhere and sent all those quarters over there, that's how many meals we would be able to provide for a child, for children. The concoction you see here is what they get. That's what they get once a day. It's cornmeal, it's wheat, it's all sorts of things like that. And then it also includes everything they need for their malnutrition support, you know, any medications they need for that. And if they have other diseases, they also put that in there and they drink it. They come from, they walk every day to get to the nutrition center, and they carry these little buckets and things. They're empty, and they carry them there, and they get them filled up, and then they sit down and they eat. Okay. The children are my favorite. This well was put in 2004 when a team went over. We were there in 2007. I was there in July, and the well was working. When I was there in October, the well was no longer working. It had broken. So they had no water at the nutrition center. We had two teams go this year, one in July and one in August. I was in the August team. The July team paid to have the well fixed, and by the time I got there in August, it was up and running again. So they have water again, which is a wonderful blessing. This building in 2007, I couldn't locate the picture fast enough, but I have a picture of me with the wall about this high, and I'm looking over it. And so that's all that was done to the building in 2007. They have it completed now. And if you go ahead. And it's now a ward for surgical patients. Prior to this, the surgical patients, the people who with diseases, the children, they were all in the same room. So this building has been completed, and now there is a ward for just the surgical patients. And that I'd show you that to let you know that there are improvements taking place. We are working very hard on this partnership, and we are making vast improvements in Congo as far as the nutrition center goes. One of the things, our next projects that we want to work on is getting solar power to the nutrition center. Because if Dr. Yahadi has to perform a emergency surgery at night, it's done by candlelight. because there is no electric. And they, or she wears, we every time we go, we take her, you know those headlamp things that you read when you go use when you go camping so you can read your book? That we take those, and she uses those sometimes, as long as she has batteries for them. There is currently one solar panel there that is running the small refrigerator she has for the medications that need to be refrigerated, but we want to be able to do it so the generators run all the time. Each time a team goes, we provide the fuel to get the generator running, so for a few days at least she has electricity when she needs it. But after the fuel is gone, there's no way for them to afford the fuel. Some of the things that other things that we've done is in 2007, we did cataract surgeries. We took a team. We went to Wemboyama, performed 84 cataract surgeries. And the people came from all around. We had one couple that showed up. They'd walked for 2 weeks to get to where they knew the surgeries were going to be. And one of the things that the Congolese people do is when they go, when they have to come for these surgeries, they bring their entire family with them. Because if they don't bring people to provide care for them after the surgery, they don't get any. It's not like our hospitals where you have nurses and candy stripers and all of that. There's no help there. So they bring their family members to cook for them and to care for them after they've had the cataract surgeries. We have another team that's going in April of 2011. There's actually two teams going. There's going to be a team of five that stays in Kinshasa to perform cataract surgeries, and there's a team that's going, of five that's going to Loja. So we are going to continue this project as often as we can. The roads are improving. When I was there in 2007, the roads were basically potholes. You know, you just go from one to the next. They are paving the roads now. They have buildings that are going up. Things are taking place that are improving the life of the Congolese people. I went to Haiti. I just got back. I don't even know when I got back. Last Saturday, I think. It's all becoming a blur. I left August 20th to go to Congo. I was there 2 weeks. And then I left for Haiti on the, I think it was the 7th of October. And then next Saturday, I leave for Nicaragua. I don't normally plan trips that close together. It just worked out that way. But if you see where Port-au-Prince is up here, it's in this little notch down here. And then we drove, followed the red line over to a place that's called Petit Grove. And we're very fortunate that the United Methodist Church has four guest houses in Haiti. So there's one in Port-au-Prince, which just happens to, it used to be the Swiss embassy. So it's a fairly decent building. It's very nice. Unfortunately, because of the earthquake, there's no city water supply to it. There's no city electric to it. So they use solar power to keep the place lit when they can. And water in the building is gravity-fed. It's the only way to get any water in there. But at Petit Grove, where we went, there was another Methodist house, guest house, so we got to stay there. This one has even less... We were out of electric most of the time, and we didn't have any water most of the time, but we had a building to sleep in, and that was a blessing. And then from there, we would drive to our work site, which was in Fondue. Now, this team that I went on was a conference team, and the reason we did it is because Volunteers in Mission, which is run by the United Methodist Church, they are not willing to send teams to Haiti unless somebody on the team has Haiti experience. So we had a conference team that went down. There were eight of us. And our sole purpose was to go and work, but our secondary purpose was so that we would have the experience necessary so that we can take teams that churches want to send down. We can go with them as their Haiti experienced person.